Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Michigan, for many years now, has been kind of a purple state. There are bright red areas of our state outside of southeast Michigan and the other urban centers. And then there are pretty bright blue places like Detroit or Lansing or Grand Rapids. But its reddish elements, the places where conservative politics kind of take the day, are getting redder and redder over time. That's partly because our parties are becoming more and more nationalized, and the Republican Party, of course, is no exception. The state party is following its voters, who mostly seem to stand with Donald Trump, and there are other issues they follow, but actual policies seem to matter less. What's driving them is, where does Donald Trump stand? If you look at the slate of candidates that Republicans will have to vote on in November, I think you can see really strong evidence of this. In a year when Democrats nationally are expected to do pretty poorly because it's a midterm election and the president, who's a Democrat, is really unpopular, they should be poised to take many of the things that Democrats are holding in states like Michigan, the governorship, for instance. But if you look at the candidates that they have, they are so far to the right that they probably are going to have a really hard time attracting that middle kind of space that candidates, especially Republican candidates, tend to dominate in Michigan. So what does that mean for the party? How much of this is just about the time that we're living in and the profound influence that Donald Trump has over the Republican Party? Or how much of it is something bigger, maybe a bigger shift that will last longer and maybe threaten the viability of the Republican Party, not just here in Michigan, but nationally? These are questions that, of course, are swirling as we get closer and closer to the November elections. And as we do that, we on Detroit Today want to have a lot of conversations about what's going on in the Republican Party, what's going on in the Democratic Party, and what voters will face when they get to the polls in November. What does all this say about our politics in general and our future? Chad Livengood is the politics editor and a columnist at the Detroit News, and he has been spending some time thinking a lot about these questions, particularly in the run-up to the midterms. He is here with us today to talk about where the Republican Party is, how it's changing, and what particular issues are driving the base. Chad, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Stephen.
Also with us is Dennis Darnoy. He is a Republican political consultant who tracks voter data. Dennis, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me on, Stephen.
So here's where I want to start, and it is with that big picture premise about if you take a look at the slate of candidates that Republicans will be putting in front of voters in November, what does it tell us about the party? What does it tell us about the influence of Donald Trump over the party? And what does it tell us about the chances that the party can take advantage of the weakness, the strategic weakness that Democrats face just because this is a midterm election? Chad, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I would start with the attorney general's race. Back in April, the Republicans held what's known as an endorsement convention, their actual nominating convention for attorney general and secretary of state and state board of education and the boards at U of M and Wayne State and MSU is not until the 27th of August, but they held this early convention for delegates to state delegates. We're talking about a nexus of 3,000 Republican activists to essentially crown someone in advance. Because in this system, both the Democratic and Republican parties do not have primaries for these statewide offices below governor. Mm-hmm. And so it's all dominated by essentially by the far right and far left wings, the very activists ends of the Republican and Democratic Party. And the Republicans nominated Matthew DiPerno, an attorney who kind of came to some powers of sorts in the Republican Party because he pursued unproven claims of voter fraud and manipulation of the votes in tiny Antrim County. This case got a lot of attention because Antrim County had some kind of a glitch on election night and was posting results that showed Biden winning by 20 points, whereas Trump won by more than 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
And so Matthew DiPerno rises to power, and he knocks off a former House Speaker, Tom Leonard. And DiPerno, his rise to power is purely at the hands of Donald Trump. Donald Trump endorsed him early on, and he has become now like a Trump whisperer of sorts, where if you want to get to Trump, you have to go through DiPerno and a few others, including Michonne Maddock, the co-chair of the Republican Party. And it really kind of shows just how powerful Trump has become, that he can crown people in conventions and make them the nominee. And doesn't matter to people, at least Republicans, rank and file, that DiPerno is at a huge disadvantage when it comes to money. He's like the incumbent attorney general, has a 14-1 advantage in money on hand right now. Tom Leonard, the former speaker who lost that race, he's got 3-1 advantage in amount of money he has on hand compared to Matt DiPerno. And so the Republican base is really kind of, they just follow Trump at every turn now, and we saw that as evidenced in the governor's race, where Trump came in and endorsed Tudor Dixon on the Friday before the primary, and she ended up winning by nearly 20 points. It didn't matter how much Kevin Rinke spent $10 million of his own money. It all came down to who Trump was endorsing, and other, you know, just normal Republican principles and such kind of get thrown out the door for following who Trump selects.
Yeah, yeah. So Dennis Darnoy, I think that Attorney General's race is a really interesting example of the kind of tensions that exist around the influence that Trump has over the Republican Party, and of course this need and desire to try to win in November. But I'm curious about your take on the bigger context as well, not just Matt DiPerno, but also Christina Caramo, some of the other candidates who are on the ballot. What can we glean from this slate about what's going on inside the Republican Party?
Well, I think what we can see is that it really matters who controls the level of power at the state level when it comes to internal politics. If you look at a state like Georgia, for example, Trump went all in on a bunch of candidates, but he was going up against the establishment there and known candidates, and he was very unsuccessful. But if you look at a state like Michigan, where it was very much a blank slate. I mean, going into, you know, the last days of the gubernatorial primary, you know, I think undecided was probably the leading candidate at that point in time. And so, you know, if you are able to, you know, set up a pre-convention, if you will, to nominate the candidates that you want, you are going to end up with candidates that the Republicans have, like a Matt DiPerno. And so, again, it's you know, Trump's hold over the party is certainly strongest where there isn't, I'd say, unified opposition, where there is a blank slate of candidates, and his endorsement then matters. And as we definitely saw that with the Dixon campaign, where she went from, you know, somewhere around 14% to 41%, and the eventual nominee.
Hmm. So I want to talk about Trump and his influence over voters here in Michigan as opposed to candidates, and whether it's enough to result in wins in November. This question about running to the right in the primary, and then I suppose maybe continuing to run to the right in the general, which is a different strategy for Republicans, and it's not one that we've seen be terribly successful over time. But talk about the voters who Republicans will need to win these contests in November, and whether Trump has influence over them. We know he has tremendous influence over the base, but you've got to win more moderate voters. You've got to win independents. What are the chances that this strategy makes much sense given the makeup of the state, Chad?
Yeah, I go back to the suburbs of Detroit, to western Wayne County, and kind of a middle swath of central Oakland County. This is where Democrats cleaned the clots of Republicans in 2018 in the so-called pink wave, where you had Republican, mostly male, legislators lose seats in for the state Senate. Two Senate seats flipped to Democrats in western Wayne County. Laura Cox, the state rep at the time, she lost, and wife of the former Attorney General Mike Cox, she lost a Senate seat in the northwest corner of Wayne County, Livonia. That kind of Livonia to West Bloomfield area there, and further east to Troy, Democrats won a bunch of different legislative seats, and Gretchen Whitmer picked up a ton of vote. And you saw a lot of the polling data out of the Seminary St. Mary's, and also just from talking to voters at the polls that day, there was a lot of Republican women who and independent women who made the decision because they were turned off by Trump at the time. And so that being turned off by Trump in that midterm has not really changed in this midterm. If anything, it's probably gotten worse in some regards. Then you add in the whole issue of abortion, which Republican politicians in general, according to the polling the Detroit News did back in mid-July among Republican voters, Republican politicians are not in step with their own base on this issue. We polled just the two basic questions about whether you support abortion in cases of rape and incest, and it was 68% among Republican voters only. These are folks that were planning to vote in the primary. And then when you asked if you supported rape or incest abortion for rape or incest in cases of a minor child, a 13, 14-year-old girl, and that support went up to 75%. Tudor Dixon opposes this. Every Republican, except for Kevin Rinke, that was on the ballot for governor, opposes this exception. And most of the Republican nominees for Congress and several state legislators and leadership, they oppose this as well. And on this issue, I mean, this is a vulnerability for Republicans that's sitting out there right now. And you already see it right now in the advertising. Right from day one, the Democratic Governors Association went, right the day after the primary, went on air with an ad about Tudor Dixon's opposition and calling, basically labeling her an extremist on the issue of abortion. And they have they've been on the air for 2 weeks defining her, and you haven't heard any response from Tudor Dixon or from the Republican Party or the Republican Governors Association. And that is really going to be a vulnerability for Tudor Dixon in the suburbs of Detroit, yeah, and other suburbs too.
And you know, you're saying that, you know, both parties have issues with their more radical influences, but if you look at the other side of the political spectrum here in Michigan, especially, I mean, it's hard to say that Democrats are behaving in the way that you just described. For instance, Tudor Dixon taking a position that is so far out of the mainstream, and that seems like the problem that they're having with this election. I mean, Gretchen Whitmer, when she ran 4 years or 2 years ago, was 4 years ago, was able to capture lots of what you would call moderate or conservative areas of the state because she's not terribly leftist. I mean, she's not part of the extreme wing of the Democratic Party. I mean, this is happening on one side in a different way. Wouldn't you agree, Chan?
Yeah, I mean, she won that primary, a three-way primary, and her chief opponent, Abdul al-Sayyid,
was Abdul, right?
Former health director of the city of Detroit. He was the far left. He was the Bernie candidate in that race, and all for Medicare for all. Attacked her for her father being the CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield, and tried to take her down as sort of a pawn for the insurance industry, and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And she won handily, and then she sort of stayed in that semi left of center lane that Gretchen Whitmer kind of came of age in as the minority leader in the state Senate.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the slate of Republican candidates who are on the ballot in November, what it means about where the party is headed, and what it means for voters. We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. What do you make of what the Republicans are offering this fall? Are you a Republican? Are you somebody who worries about where the party is headed? Or are you enthusiastic about the candidates who will be on the ballot, and you think that eventually people will come around to embracing this more radical version of conservatism? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Today on 101.9 WDET, I'm Stephen Henderson. And as always, thanks for tuning in. My guests right now are Chad Livengood, politics editor and a columnist at the Detroit News. Also with us is Dennis Darnoy, a Republican political consultant who tracks voter data. We're talking about the prospects for Republican candidates this fall, given the slate of candidates that they have, especially for the statewide races. They are much further to the right than you would normally see from the party. They are more influenced by former President Donald Trump than perhaps makes a lot of sense in a state like Michigan, which rejected Donald Trump at the polls in 2020, and also has rejected a lot of the candidates that he's backed when there are statewide questions. The question is this just about right now and what's going on in the party, or is this a more significant shift in the party that threatens its viability for a much longer period of time? As always, we want to hear from you, what you think of the candidates, either in statewide races or in the local races that'll be on your ballot in November. What do you think it tells you about the Republican Party in the state right now? Give us a call. Let us know what you think about Donald Trump's influence, apparent influence over the Republican Party here. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's go to Ruby in Ferndale. Ruby, what's on your mind?
Hi, Stephen.
Hey.
At the risk of being a one-trick pony, I hope that the Dems realize that the evening that Trump's documents were seized, Viktor Orban was in Texas speaking against race mixing, and for the last couple years, the GOP has been courting and wooing this man and his example of autocracy. They're striving to replicate that. If we need a wave of voters, more people need to know and understand the playbook that the GOP has taken up.
Yeah, great point, Ruby. I'm glad you called me that. Dennis Darnoy, I'd love to hear you respond to what Ruby's talking about there.
Well, you know, when we were talking about, you know, is this a new phenomenon within the Republican Party? And I think, you know, I'm sort of the age, probably most people aren't. But, you know, when you go back to the Republican National Convention in 1992 and Pat Buchanan got up there and gave a speech called his culture war speech.
Right. Announced and the culture war. Right.
Absolutely. And then 2 years later was the Republican takeover with the contract with America that was, you know, set up by Newt Gingrich. So, you know, this is one of those things that has it's been brewing within the Republican Party now for 30 years. And so it is something that is going to continue to play out. You asked a question earlier, is this a threat to their relevancy? And I think to Chad's point, you know, when the Dobbs ruling came down from the Supreme Court, it really gave Republicans an opportunity to you know, adjust their policy platforms when it came to pro-life and pro-family. They had an opportunity to focus more on things like child care support and home visitation services, economic assistance and improved access to medical care. But at this point in time, unfortunately, Republicans are left to defend the notion that 14-year-old girls who are raped should carry the rapist child to term. When you're having those arguments or that's your position, you really aren't part of the conversation. And so, you know, right now, Republicans are missing an opportunity to get back to being the party of ideas and the party of policies. And if they continue down that, I mean, it then becomes a monologue instead of a dialogue with voters.
And if you think about the ways in which that could hurt this fall in particular, Dennis, I mean, it's an incredibly lost opportunity if you read the polls, right? If you believe that people are as angry with President Biden as the polls say they are, or as dissatisfied with Gretchen Whitmer.
Absolutely. I mean, you can have conversations about the role of government when it comes to COVID restrictions, and you can argue whether or not what Governor Whitmer did was beneficial to the economy. But when you start getting into conspiracy theories over the makers of the vaccine or pointing fingers at where it came from and you know, embracing, you know, wild theories about, you know, it being a biological weapon or man-made, you are losing opportunities. And I think Republicans very early on thought that they had a good chance to you know, win back the governor's mansion. And I think even, you know, there was some thought that the attorney general's race was going to be a very competitive one. You know, for Republicans to be successful this cycle on the platform that they are currently talking about, they would have to try to replicate Donald Trump's victory in 2016, where he did not win Oakland County, but he stole areas such as Bay County and Saginaw County. He was successful in Kent County, which has changed tremendously demographically since his victory in 2016. They would have to, you know, have large margins of victory in Livingston County, which has changed geographically. So, you know, I think there are going to be those within the party that say, no, there is a roadmap to be far right and win without some of the suburb areas that we talk about. But unfortunately, I think the demographics have changed over those 6 years, and they aren't speaking to the issues that affect those people.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Ben in Waterford. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've been paying attention to politics for a long time now, and it's just been interesting to see the primaries recently, specifically Kansas and Wyoming, with Liz Cheney losing, but the abortion rights being upheld in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the margins of victory, it's pretty staggering in those. I mean, Kansas and Wyoming are staunchly Republican states, and recently with Liz Cheney's loss, I mean, 25% of Republicans voted against their guy. I mean, voted against Donald Trump in a place where, I mean, it's staunchly Republican. I don't think it's the victory that they think it is.
Yeah. Ben, I really appreciate you bringing up those examples from those other states, and they do point out how how out of step this stuff is with voters and in Wyoming in particular. I think how dangerous the party and its candidates are making themselves out to be. I mean, this candidate who beat Liz Cheney has said some really, really outrageous things about not just politics and policy, but about Democratic politicians. And it looks like she's going to be headed to Congress. Chad, I wonder what your reaction is to what Ben's talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, to the point about the staunchly Republican voters of Kansas rejecting an effort to take away any right to abortion. In the Detroit News WDIV poll from last month, we polled the Republican voters. When 75% of them said they support a minor child getting an abortion in cases of rape or incest. Just 16% said that they opposed that. So just extrapolate that. 16% of Republican voters think a 14-year-old girl should carry her rapist child to term, and that's what the majority of Republican politicians right now on the ballot this fall are endorsing or backing the 16%. And that just seems like a recipe for disaster for Republicans going into these elections, because again, they're going to be a messaging that is going to target Republican women and independent women, and when we look at the polling on that, it gets worse for Republicans, and so. I would not discount the power of the Republican women in this election to decide a lot of races up and down the ballot. Yeah. That's why Republicans are desperately trying to keep this abortion amendment off the ballot that would enshrine abortion rights in our state constitution and essentially take the legislature out of this equation, because right now we've gone back to this 1931 law that banned all forms of abortion except in the cases of saving the life of the mother. This law, we did the research on this. This law dates back to the 1840s, about 80 years before women had a right to vote in this state. And so I would really sort of watch this issue closely as the election nears, and really as the absentee ballots go out in the mail the third week in September. That's when we're going to really start seeing a lot of advertising in your mailboxes and on your television screens aimed at this specific issue.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Dennis, I wonder if you can talk a little about that abortion referendum question that could be on the ballot here in Michigan, and also some of the other issues that again could hurt Republicans at the polls, the things that will be on people's minds that they're on the wrong side of.
Well, sure. Just to clarify, the issue in Kansas was actually taking something out of the Constitution. Here in Michigan, we would be adding, abortion rights to the Constitution. So that is a huge difference when it comes to the motivation of voters. And so I think while the turnout among Republican voters and those who supported the Kansas initiative is impressive, and I think it does send a message, that slight difference between taking away and adding is incredibly important. And I think Chad, said something that, certainly tweaked my ears, and I'm sure among, state senators who are of the Republican ilk obviously took notice too. And that is, if the top of the ticket is so out of touch with the voters of Michigan, there is a trickle-down effect. And, you know, Democrats have to be looking at the state Senate, a chamber that they haven't won in a very long time, and seeing an opportunity there. And so if all of a sudden Republican voters are either dissuaded from going to the polls because they can't support the candidates or or, you know, are just turned off, that can have a significant impact on who is governing Michigan for a good while, and obviously the 4 years. The one ballot initiative that will be interesting to see is the term limits one. I think that is something that Republican voters can get behind. I think that's an initiative that, you know, Republican candidates can promote. But obviously it is, in this post-Dobbs world, the abortion initiative that is going to draw the most attention. And it will draw pro-life voters out. It's not just, pro-choice voters who are going to come, but pro-life voters are very excited about the opportunity to, you know, express their opinion on that issue. But at the end of the day, I think Chad was spot on when he said, if the top of the ticket is going to suffer and they are catering to 16% of a Republican primary electorate, that could have significant impact on how Michigan's governed.
Yeah. Okay, Chad Livengood and Dennis Darnoy, it was great to have both of you here to talk about this. We will, of course, be revisiting this this issue and all of these races a bunch before November. I want to get both of you quickly to make some predictions about what we see in November. We've got about a minute left. Chad, go ahead.
Oh, Stephen, I got out of the predictions business.
You won't do it?
Yeah. I think, I mean, my you know, earlier points still stand. If some of these critical issues like abortion, Republicans don't find a way to get their views closer to what their own voters are, that the general electorate is going to reject them and up and down the ballot on several fronts.
Yeah. Dennis?
I'm going to say it's a statewide sweep for the Democrats at the top of the ticket. The abortion initiative passes. State House goes Democrat, and I'm going to say the state Senate stays in the hands of Republicans or it's tied.
Wow. Okay. Well, we will check back in again before we get to November, and of course, we'll all be talking about it after the election. Thanks again for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to be talking about a new book that explores how people assist each other and fill in the gaps when government resources are not around to help. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.